Welcome to How to Cover an Election, where four broadcast journalism students tackle an election campaign for the first time.
Each week, we're talking to experts in their fields as we look at all the key themes for the media in the build-up to the polls.
We'll also talk you through our experiences of election coverage as the contest heats up.
This week, we're discussing all things polls with an insight from Professor Roger Awanskali.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of How to Cover an Election. We've had a very busy week, but before we get to that, let's give you a little teaser of what's to come in the next few episodes. All right, welcome to Newport. This is How to Cover the Election podcast on tour. We're in the Newport International Conference Centre for Nigel Farage's Brexit Party rally.
Hello, this is How to Cover an Election on tour yet again. We are here at Rally for the Future in Cardiff Marina. And we're waiting for Jo Swinson and her battle bus.
So I'm here with Gitto Harry, Boris Johnson's former head of communications, is now broadcaster for SLC.
So I'm here with ITV Wales' political editor, Adrian Masters. Evening, Adrian.
Tom Simons, thanks so much for joining us.
Nicholas Webb, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So here with Jane Dawes, leader of the Welsh Liberal Democrats. I'm here with Jo Swinson.
So as you can hear, it's been a busy week for us, and we thought we might start off by just talking about what we've been up to for the past few days. We're going to start off on Friday night. We're all in Newport, as you heard in the start of that little mashup there. And I'll come to you, Gareth. What were your first impressions?
Yeah, so Friday night, a Brexit party rally in the beautiful new ICC in Newport. It was interesting. It was obviously our first rally of the election cycle this year. I just found it quite interesting behind the scenes. You know, a lot of the stuff you see on TV was there. Obviously Nigel Farage was there, and Widdecombe, some of the big candidates in Wales, and we'll talk about that a bit more later. But obviously there are other broadcasters there, and I just found it interesting because you'll watch the news later on in the night and you'll see sort of a 20-second soundbite or clip for TV of, say, Nigel Farage talking or somebody else talking. But the broadcaster's there for about an hour and a half. And other than their cameramen or camerawomen shooting footage, the actual broadcasters, the people who end up on air, they're not doing very much. You know, we found we were spending a lot of our time hanging around, obviously with one eye on what was happening and what was being said, but there's an awful lot of not wasted time, but downtime at these sorts of events. And I thought that was quite interesting.
Did you find that downtime was quite helpful, though? Because I know, Chloe, we were stood right next to the press officer for the Brexit party, and that was almost more helpful than anything Farage said for us.
The great thing was, because I guess what you're looking out for is for like that one key clip in a news package. But apart from that, you know, a few of us were, like, live tweeting and, yeah, talking to the press officer, who then gave us a bit of a scoop about when they were actually going to be releasing the Brexit party candidates, and they were going to wait right up until the deadline. And of course, we know now that a pact has essentially been made with the Conservatives. But it was really interesting to just kind of talk while it was all going on and do a bit of news gathering ourselves.
I mean, Ev, what did you think? Because we weren't really tuned into... I mean, we were listening to Farage, weren't we? But
yeah,
I mean, more important for us was what was going on elsewhere.
Yeah, I think it was a bit different for me because I was doing the camera setting, wasn't I? And I was literally following them. It was a bit of a new experience for me to cover it on a camera's perspective. And it's really hard, obviously, because we're not one of the mainstream media outlets. We were on the side. And it's a bit harder to cover it on the side because you get some things which maybe you don't want in the shot or vice versa. But it was a really good experience and I really enjoyed it.
I also thought it was quite cool how much access we had. We had as much access, even as student journalists, as any of the big players then in broadcasting in Wales or in the UK. So I thought that was quite cool, you know. And, you know, there were some funny, quirky things as well in terms of seeing how their press teams, etc., operate behind the scenes. But, yeah, I enjoyed Friday night.
Well, it was really interesting because beforehand, me and Will went round and did a few Vox Pops with people who were attending the Brexit Party rally. And it was quite interesting to get the perspectives from people who, like, some people I talked to were lifelong Labour voters who were from that Welsh heartlands in the valleys, who have now for the first time, you know, breaking away from that and voting for the Brexit Party.
And let's touch a little bit on the Brexit Party's position in Wales, because obviously since we were there, I mean, at that time they were still promising to challenge in 600 seats around the country. Since then they've stood down in all the Conservative won seats, but obviously most seats in Wales are Labour run seats, but they're still pretty tight, aren't they? So it'll be interesting to see what they do in terms of standing or not standing in these really marginal constituencies in Wales.
Cardiff North, for example, which is a really tight seat between Labour and the Tories.
Yeah, it is. So we saw a couple of interesting speakers. Obviously, all of the big hitters were there. Anne Widdecombe, Nigel Farage, Mark Reckless. But one that we were intrigued by was Richard Taylor. I mean, Ev, you were impressed by the way he spoke.
Yeah, he was a really good speaker. And he's got that type of oratorical skills to appeal to the people. He was like that man of the people type of thing. So, you know, orators like that could make a difference. And, you know, something like this might swing the vote in the favour of Brexit Party from Labour, as we sort of mentioned, with the votes crossing either side. So people like him at this election will make a massive difference.
Yeah, and I was speaking to some of the staffers at the Brexit Party, and they were almost wooing over Richard Taylor because, you know, with the Brexit Party, you've got your Farages, you've got your Widdecombes. They speak to a certain type of Brexit Party voter. But in terms of these key battleground seats in the South Wales valleys and in the north, you need people who can really connect to those communities. And you could almost see in terms of that, that his approach was very much like Labour politicians of old. And I could really see voices like his really speaking through to disenchanted Brexit voters in working class areas in the valleys. Will it take votes off the Tories? Probably. Will it take votes off Labour? Almost absolutely. It'll be very interesting to see how it goes in the South Wales valleys.
You're listening to How to Cover an Election. You can keep up with our coverage on Twitter and Instagram at HowToElection.
So moving on then to Tuesday night, and almost the polar opposite of the political spectrum as far as this election is concerned. We were at the Lib Dem campaign rally with Joe Swinson, the leader. And Ev, I want to come to you first just to talk about the comparison between Friday night at the Brexit Party rally and then Tuesday at the Lib Dem rally.
Yeah, so I thought the dynamic was very different. Obviously, we touched on there, it was in the ICC in Newport. It was quite a big auditorium with, we figured out roughly about 250 people there, give or take, of a Brexit Party. And then we compared that to the Lib Dem one last night. Very small scale at a coffee shop in Cardiff Bay in the Marina area, with probably 50 to 100 people there, give or take. Just the dynamics of both of them was really interesting. You know, the Brexit one seemed to be a lot more aggressive in tone, and Lib Dem a lot more soft. Obviously, that's party balance as well. But just for messages we're trying to convey, it was just really interesting to see a comparison between both of the campaign sort of launches.
It's amazing, isn't it, the amount of access? I mean, you were saying this at the Brexit Party thing. The amount of access we can get. We got press passes on the day, turned up with a bit of equipment, and just found ourselves mingling with the leader of the Lib Dems.
Yeah. It was literally like, I remember me and Will were kind of running around at the end of the Brexit Party thing to try and nab what interviews we could get. And you managed to get a bit of Mark Reckless, which you'll hear a bit later. But pretty much everyone else was kind of hostile towards us as press, I guess. But last night was really, it was a really good experience because we did have that access. We interviewed Jane Dodds, leader of the Welsh Lib Dems, and then Joe Swinson. Two massive interviews that we didn't think that we would have immediate access to.
You're listening to How to Cover an Election. Follow us on social media and listen to us on Spotify.
Our main focus this week has been on polling, and we'll hear a little bit from Joe Swinson and Mark Reckless on that subject later. But firstly, we spoke to Roger Owen Scully, the head of politics and international relations and the professor of political science at Cardiff University. You may know him better as the man behind the Welsh Political Barometer, often seen with Hugh Edwards on BBC News or working with ITV on the latest poll. And he sat down with us this week to talk all things polling. Roger, thanks so much for joining us. Can I ask first, what's the point of polling? What's it trying to achieve?
Well, in opinion polling, you're trying to measure various things, types of attitudes, behaviours and other things within society. Polling is normally done in relation to a defined population, which for UK general election is the electorate of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And then you're trying to, with a relatively small sample, assess how opinion, attitudes and so on stand within that much broader population. So for a general election, you're trying to assess, obviously, current support levels for the various parties, but also often some of the things that might lie behind those support levels, such as attitudes towards party leaders, attitudes towards the policies of the parties, and so on and so forth.
And how should media use that polling?
Well, I don't think polling should dominate election coverage. I think there has quite rightly been criticism at various times that coverage can become a little too obsessed at times with the sort of the horse race aspect of it, who is ahead, who is behind and whatever. I think polling is important, but it shouldn't clearly be the only deciding factor. Primarily, election coverage should, I think, be about providing ordinary voters the sort of information that they need to make a reasonably informed choice. Polling, though, I think is useful, not least as a sort of reality check on some of the wilder claims that parties can be tempted to make. If we didn't have any sort of credible public opinion polling, it might be very easy for parties to make all sorts of ridiculous claims. You know, we're on the verge of victory here, we're doing fantastically across the country. Polling provides an external reality check on those sorts of claims.
So does it then frustrate you when polls kind of dominate headlines, when, for example, in a Welsh political barometer, you've put a thing saying, be very cautious of this, this might change, but the only thing that's reported is, this is what is reality?
I mean, as somebody who's involved in the conduct and the analysis of polls, you know, I can sort of do my best to enter the various cautions and qualifiers and whatever that are appropriate. But you know, I've been in this game long enough to realise that, you know, when people see their own party or their own cause doing quite well in a poll, they tend to get very excited about that. And similarly, when they see the poll giving them bad news, they tend to find reasons to be very dismissive of the poll, sometimes even call into question the honesty of those conducting the poll. I mean, that's just what happens. It's water off a duck's back by now. I think, yeah, enough people express enough kind of gratitude to me, for instance, for helping develop Welsh polling, that I try and remember their comments and ignore the sillier ones. You know.
And talk us through the process of creating the, for example, the Welsh Political Barometer. Where do you start and where do you go from there?
Well, the Welsh Political Barometer is a collaboration between ITV Wales, who fund most of the costs of it, Cardiff University. We put in little bits of money here and there and also provide sort of free analysis and interpretation. And then YouGov, the polling agency, and the three of us sort of partners, the three legs of the stool, all involved then in the discussion of when do we poll and what do we poll about. And we have a number of standard questions in voting intention for Westminster, for the National Assembly. We, in most polls, run some sort of question as trying to assess current popularity or lack thereof of some of the major party leaders. Over the last few years, we've run a regular series of tracker questions, just tracing where things stand on Brexit. And then we have, in different polls, different questions. There are sometimes things which are topical that come up, or just things which seem to us worthy of attention, even if they're not that topical. Just it would be useful to have some evidence on this. We've started in the last few months doing a few more questions about the issue of Welsh independence or, you know, other constitutional alternatives to Wales. We periodically asked about that, but that seems to have come up with a political agenda, so we're going to be looking to ask a little bit more regularly about that, for instance. And the process is generally fairly informal. It's sort of email correspondence between myself, between our key lead at YouGov, and between a couple of people at ITV. Normally we reach consensus fairly quickly, sometimes we don't, and we discuss things. We've never yet had a sort of throwing their toys out of the pram issue. We basically try and reach consensus on these things. We all know that we couldn't really do this collaboration without the other two partners, so I think that helps, you know, kind of keep us reasonable. Yeah.
And how could something like the Remain Alliance, the pact between Lib Dem Plaid and the Green Party, kind of affect the way you poll?
Well, I think, you know, for our next poll, we're going to have to think about whether we adjust just the standard voting intention question to take account of the fact that in some constituencies, you know, different parties have stood aside. We might also need to think one or two questions about directly, you know, how aware people are of this alliance. You know, are they aware if it applies to their constituency or not, and if they are aware, what are their attitudes to it? I think one of the things which can make polling difficult is that those people who are in charge of devising polls and whatever tend by their nature to be political obsessives. And what we need to remind ourselves, and sometimes polling sort of beats us over the head with a reminder about, is that, of course, most people are not like that. Most people are a very long way distant from that. One of the things I say to an undergrad class I teach final year, optional module here on elections in the UK, is that everyone in this room is in the top 5% of most politically engaged people in the UK. Probably around 95% of people are less interested in politics and elections than you are. And that can make it difficult to write polls. You know, somebody who is obsessed about these things, really interested in them, to think yourself into the mindset of people who for the most part are not, and devise questions that make sense to them, not just to you.
This might be an impossible question to answer, but just how volatile is the political situation at the minute? And, I mean, does that make your job almost impossible?
Well, I mean, this time last year, the Britain-wide polls were showing Labour and the Conservative Party at 40% or above. By the European election in May, the Conservatives got 9% of the vote. Labour didn't do a great deal better. We've seen extraordinary changes over the last year in the support levels of the parties. At the moment, thus far in the general campaign, the polls have been relatively stable, and Conservatives and Labour maybe edging up a bit. But it's far from certain that that will continue all the way through to polling day. One thing is very clear if you study the electorate in Britain is that certainly the potential for volatility has increased substantially. Way back about 55 years ago, when people started doing systematic in-depth interviews with representative samples of the British electorate, around about half of all people who were spoken to said that they were very strong identifiers with a political party, and that's normally Labour or Conservative. Nowadays, the proportion who are strong, very strong identifiers with any political party is, on most estimates, below 10%. Yeah, there are still some people who are absolutely diehard supporters of Labour or Conservative or Plaid or Lib Dems or S&P or whatever, but they're very much a minority these days. And that creates the potential for more volatility. In British election study, you've tracked for a sample of voters in 2010, 2015, 2017, and very nearly half of all of their sample voted for at least two political parties in those three general elections. So the days when people would be Labour for life or always a Tory or whatever, well, OK, there's still a few people like that, but the days when lots of people were like that, I think, are in the past. There's no signs of those days coming back. And that makes things harder to predict.
In terms of us as trainee journalists, then, what would you advise us on how we use polls going forward in the future, maybe to cover elections?
Cautiously. Try and understand a little bit, as sadly quite a few journalists don't, about the basic principles behind sampling and why you get sample sizes, why polling is difficult, why getting a representative sample is very difficult. And also, before you leap, deadlines and things like that is difficult, but before you leap into immediate analysis, try and look under the bonnet a bit in the details of the question wording, things like that. Most of the polls that are published by companies like YouGov and ICM and Mori and things like that, these are long-standing, very, very good companies who run legitimate polls, but sometimes they may have clients who push them to ask them about things in a different way. One of the most robust findings in survey research is that on many topics, if you ask things in just a slightly different way, you can get quite a significantly different response. So try and sort of have a sense, okay, how was this asked in this particular poll? Have there been other polls that have asked about the issue in a slightly different way? If you ask about an issue in different ways and you get similar responses, then that's good. And it suggests that the poll is really getting at something meaningful and fairly stable in public attitudes. Sometimes, though, you ask about it in a slightly different way and a very different picture emerges. That might mean that actually public opinion is quite fluid on this issue and that maybe there's actually all to play for in terms of political debate. And often, a lot of political debate is really about politicians trying to define the terms in which an issue is understood. And if talking about an issue in slightly different terms leads to different attitudes, that shows that maybe something that, the politicians onto something, they really defining how that issue is understood will be very important.
Thank you very much.
That's great. Thank you very much. Cheers.
I've only all media interviews with this simple.
So that was Roger Aaron Scully talking to us about polling. Now, Gareth, that's the first time you've heard that interview. I want to come to you first for a bit of immediate reaction.
Yeah, I found it really interesting. We see and read so much about polls, especially at election times, and it makes you wonder sometimes. You see such huge disparities between one poll and another. It makes you think, you know, who's behind these polls? What are their intentions and how can they be so different? It's just to listen and for you guys to speak to somebody who's at the centre of that was really interesting. For me, I think, you know, polls are a snapshot, but the media loves them. And having now spoken to Professor Aaron Scully, I was wondering what you guys thought in terms of, do you think that media love of polls is driven by the media or by, like Professor Aaron Scully said, parties picking them up and seeing what they're saying about them?
They're often used to get a good headline, aren't they? Like, if there's been a drastic shift in a poll towards one way or the other, it's, you know, it's kind of an easy headline for the media to grab onto.
We should talk about, firstly, the use of polls in the media, like you touched on there. I mean, Evan, Roger Aaron Scully emphasised there that the media can go a bit crazy when it comes to polling, especially when it suits the narrative that is already driving the election. So, I mean, we're going to have to be responsible, aren't we, in the way that we look at these polls, especially the Welsh Political Barometer that we'll be focusing on, and the way that it affects our coverage.
Well, I was just going to say, Roger made it really clear to us that, you know, the media really overemphasise them and really, you know, blurt out these lines, as we sort of mentioned already. But, you know, we should really take a step back. Again, like we said last week, we've got to take a step back and just think what this actually could mean. And we've always got to be aware, obviously, but again, as Roger said, it's only a snapshot. It's nothing really in comparison. I think the polls they do on average are about 1,500 people, give or take. You know, population of Wales is 3 million people, so it's a very, very small percentage. But nevertheless, it's always interesting to find out who these people are and what their thoughts are, the current situation is.
Yeah, and it's not just the media that needs to be careful, it's also politicians. And we spoke this week to the Brexit Party's Mark Reckless and, of course, Liberal Democrat leader Joe Swinson. And we asked them how they look at polls and whether it affects the way they campaign in a general election.
Yeah, I read polls. I take note of them. But they haven't had a terribly good record in recent elections, so I wouldn't put too much emphasis.
But certainly not what you're campaigning on is not driven by what you see in the polls.
No, I don't think so. I think of the policies you have, perhaps the degree of emphasis, I think you'd consider how people react and what people say, and polls is one way to look at that.
Well, I mean, obviously people look at polls and they can be interesting, and, you know, I'm a bit of a data geek, so I always quite enjoy crawling over a spreadsheet, but equally what's most important is getting out there and speaking to people, and whether that's on the doorsteps or whether that's at events or visiting different organisations, that's always a really good way of just getting an understanding of what people are thinking, what's concerning them, what their hopes are for the future, and that's what really for me is much more of a guiding light.
I mean, I don't know about you, I found it interesting there that the question was basically, do you let polls drive strategy? And the answer was basically no.
It's interesting from the Liberal Democrats when they've used polls so extensively so far in this election.
Yeah.
I think polls are as untrustworthy potentially in terms of what the public think of them as ever. You hear a lot of people saying they're over-exaggerated, look at what happened in 2017. So to hear from how the party candidate or how the parties use them was quite interesting. But I think parties do have a love for them when they're saying the right things.
Because polls drive the narrative, don't they? If a party's doing well in the polls, other people may be more inclined to vote for them because they think they've got a realistic chance of winning. So for the Lib Dems, that's a really big thing, I think.
Yeah, well, they are going to use them, aren't they? You know, if it's, like you say, if it's their narrative and their situation, of course they're going to use them. But I did find it really interesting that they both sort of downplayed it. Is that you'd like to know inside the real party apparatus is but how much they do actually worth. You know, if you put like a percentage on it, maybe, you know, like they were probably saying, oh yeah, maybe it's worth 20-30% of what we do. But in reality, it could be a lot more. And obviously, if, like you said, the narrative suits them, it's going to go right up the rankings and right up the scales.
Yeah, you can pick and choose from different polls as well, can't you, to what suits the narrative of the party, which I think is the main thing with polls.
It can also be a real shot in the arm for a party, I think, if they... Because you can judge it, can't you, in terms of how your campaign is going compared to what polling is saying. I just think it's something that we have to be really wary of.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week. We've got so much to come in the coming weeks. We may even bring out a special midweek, I think. But otherwise, we'll be focusing next week on Vox Pops and the student vote. Until then, let's give you some details about how you can get in contact with us.
So you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at HowToElection. If you have any comments or suggestions or any questions, you can email us at howtocoveranelection@gmail.com.
And leave us a review on Spotify.
Yes, please do leave us a review on Spotify. We are available on Spotify or on Anchor FM, but until next week, we will say goodbye.
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 Goodbye.